We get reports of people who have got somewhere near such and such a pole and have gone on for many miles. In other words, they have been more or less lost. Ancient history, and modern history too, teaches us that often sailors will spot debris floating from the poles. I use poles just to conform and make the location obvious. There are also floating animals or birds. Now, everyone knows that you don't get birds and insects flying at the North Pole or the South Pole. You don't get green leaves floating, so where do they come from? From inside the Earth, of course. I believe this. Supposing one had a vehicle and one could journey from here wherever you are at the moment is here to the North Pole, you would go on and you would reach what you would believe to be the location of the North Pole. And then you would continue on and eventually you would find yourself with a different sort of sun above you. The sun being an atomic sort of thing occurring naturally not merely in the center of this Earth but in many other worlds as well. Astronomers have found that on the moon, for instance, there are strange lights seen at times about the poles. You might say, oh yes, but men have been to the moon. Sure they have, but they have been to a very limited spot on the moon. A spot, a circle, of about 5 miles radius. Oh no, they haven't explored the moon, and they haven't explored this Earth. There is quite a lot of this Earth which still has to be explored. If you are interested and if you go to your public library, I am sure you can find many books dealing with an inner Earth and stories of people who have been lost and then have sailed on into a strange world, and eventually they have found themselves just inside the inner world. Better than the library, buy some books at a good bookstore. People have asked me to explain whatever such a world could look like. How can there be a world which is hollow inside? The best way I can explain it is like this. Imagine you have a coconut. The outside of the coconut is the outer earth. And remember this, that if your hands are hot, the moisture which you have deposited on the outside of the coconut in merely touching it is equal to the depth of the deepest sea on this, the full-size Earth. That's a thought worth bearing in mind. Anyway, you've got your coconut and you are looking at the outer side of it. That represents our conventional Earth. Now, make a hole in the part known as the eyes, and make another hole in the part right opposite the eyes. You can liken these to the North and the South Poles. You should make the hole about an inch in diameter and let out all the milk. Then you have the outer hard shell which is the crust of the earth, and inside you have the white flesh of the coconut which represents the inner world surface. Right in the middle of the coconut you have to somehow fix a flashlight bulb to represent the ever-burning inner sun. Now the hard shell which is the crust and the softer inner side which provides footing for inner worlders provides, also, the source of gravity which keeps people feet down, on the upper surface and feet down on the inner surface. There is no evidence whatever that the inner surface of the Earth is molten gas or molten iron or molten rock or molten anything else. That has just been a supposition of scientists who have made many other false suppositions, like when they said that if a man traveled at more than 30 miles an hour his lungs would burst with the air pressure. And like when they said that it would be impossible for any spaceship to land on the moon because it would sink right into the impalpable dust. Oh no, scientists are merely guessers with a university education. Often they are worse guessers than people without a university education because scientists are taught that if this person or that person says a thing is impossible then it is indeed impossible, and so instead of being taught to think they are just being taught to think that author so and so is infallible and if he says a thing is impossible then indeed it is. I believe that people inside the Earth are very, very highly evolved people indeed who are remnants from Lemuria, Mu, Atlantis, and many even older civilizations. The Earth has been wrecked by cataclysms, storms, meteors and all the rest of it, and often people on the surface have been decimated yet inside life goes on serenely, untroubled by things that are happening outside and so spirituality and scientific knowledge has progressed. You may not be aware that the Chileans, who have a great interest in the South Pole areas, have photographed UFOs rising out of that territory. Most interesting pictures were taken by a geophysical team of Chilean scientists. Unfortunately, under considerable pressure, those photographs were turned over to the USA authorities. And that is the last that has been heard of them. UFOs are of different types, but one type comes from inside the Earth, and there are many UFOs seen nowadays because the inner people are greatly worried by the atomic explosions taking part on the outer surface of the Earth. After all, if the explosion is big enough, then perhaps the crust of the Earth will be cracked even worse than it is at present, and the whole Earth will perish. That is why the inner people are so concerned, why they are trying to control atomic research on this world. Have you really studied the journeys of explorers who claim they have been to the North Pole or to the South Pole? Without any exception, they report that they found the temperature rising as they traveled north. They found more open seas than they expected. They found many things which were completely at variance with the North Pole or South Pole theory, where things got colder and colder as the poles were approached. Actually, the poles do not exist except as some mythical symbol up in the air, perhaps in the center of the opening leading into the Earth. The aurora borealis could easily be the reflections from the inner sun when conditions are suitable, or there could even be radiations from the nuclear life within your world. But someone is sure to say all this is impossible. Of course, there is no hole leading into the Earth. The idea is absurd, ridiculous. If there was a whacking great hole at the North Pole and another at the South Pole, then obviously air pilots would have seen them, astronauts would have seen the holes also, and in fact anyone looking would be able to see right through the Earth just the same as one can see daylight through the other end of a blown egg. No, someone is sure to say, this author has gone round the bend at last. If he didn't go round years ago. That attitude is all wrong, you know. It shows that the person doesn't know the facts. How many of you have been to the North Pole? How many of you have been to the South Pole? How many of you know climatic conditions there? What about cloud coverage, for example? What about viewing conditions? No, critical reader, I haven't gone round the bend you have. If you think that all this is impossible, if you think all this is impossible, then you are not merely around the bend, you are cantering along the home straight, which is a darn sight worse. Think how in well-populated areas great caves have remained hidden for hundreds or thousands of years. Look at the cave in which the Dead Sea Scrolls were found. That cave was only found completely by accident. Look at Canada. Great areas of Quebec have not been explored. And supposing a plane flew over certain of these areas in Quebec, which would be covered with ice most of the year, then photographs might show reflections precisely as it should show reflections from snow and ice. Or the photographs may show dark patches precisely as they could show dark patches of snow and ice. Ice can be of many different colors, you know. It is not all white and tinsely like you put on Christmas trees. You can even get red snow in certain areas. I know that because I have seen it. But the whole point is that a photograph taken over the approximate location of the North Pole or the South Pole might show strange shadows, but if people had no reason to investigate the shadows, then they wouldn't go there and probe, would they? It takes a lot of money too to mount an expedition to the mythical North Pole or the equally mythical South Pole. It takes a lot of money. It takes a special breed of man, it takes a lot of backup supplies, and it takes a big bank account to pay the insurance. But back to Canada, many, many areas in the Northern Territories have not been explored. Some areas have never even been seen by humans. How do you know what holes there are in the Northern Territories when no one has been there? It is stupid to say these things are impossible until you know all the facts. Until you are an expert in photography, until you are an expert in geology. Think of astronauts or cosmonauts, or whatever the current term for them is. Well, then they are taking off and are reasonably close to the Earth. Presumably they have something else to do besides look for a hole where the North Pole or South Pole should be, and in the polar regions the viewing is often horribly unsatisfactory. Fogs, snowstorms, confusing reflections from snow, ice and water. It's worth noticing also that when astronauts are in orbit they have specific tasks to do, taking a peep at the Russians, taking an even harder look at the Chinese. Are there telltale shadows which indicate that silos have been erected which could be the starting point of intercontinental ballistic missiles? And if so, in which direction are the silos inclined? By knowing things like this, the Americans can tell if the warlords of Peking have rockets aimed at New York or Los Angeles, or somewhere else. They have to take into account the degree of inclination and the rotation of the Earth so that they can then forecast to within just a few miles the target area of the ICBMs. The Americans are much more interested in knowing what the Russians, the Poles, the Chinese and the Czechs are doing than finding out something about a hole in the Earth. Some of the Americans, for instance, would be more interested in checking a hole in the head than a hole in the Earth. So you can take it that unless there are very special conditions and very special circumstances, these particular openings in the Earth would not be photographed. And as for thinking that you could look in one end and see out through the other just as you would through a straight railway tunnel, well, that idea is crazy. You couldn't do it. Think of a railway tunnel absolutely dead straight. You look in one end and if you are very, very careful, you might possibly see a little dot of light at the other end. And that railway tunnel may be not even half a mile long. We, if we were looking through a hole in the Earth, would have to look at something which was nearly 8,000 miles long. That is, the tunnel through which you would be looking, through the Earth, would be so long that you just wouldn't see any light at the other end. Not only that, but even if you had such good sight that you could see all the way through and distinguish a small hole, then you would still be looking at darkness, because unless the sun was opposite you would have no light reflection, would you? If you are going to deny the possibility of there being a hollow Earth, then you are just as bad as the people who think that the world is flat. In passing, I wonder how the Flat Earth Society in London, England, explains some of the astronauts' photographs now. As far as I am aware, there is still a society in England who swear on a stack of comics. Must be comics, that the world is flat and all the photographs have been faked. I read something about it and had a good laugh, and I wish I could remember where I read the article. Anyway, if you are not sure, why not keep an open mind, then you won't be caught short when the proof is forthcoming? There is another thing you have to consider. The governments of the world, or rather the governments of the superpowers, are nearly killing themselves to hush up everything about UFOs. Why? Millions of people have seen UFOs. I was reading an article only yesterday in which it was said that statistics prove that 15 million Americans have seen UFOs. So if 15 million in one country alone have seen them, then it's a sure thing that there must be something like UFOs. Argentina, Chile, and other sensible countries acknowledge the existence of UFOs. They don't necessarily understand what they are or why they are. But they acknowledge them, and that is a big step forward. The governments hush up and conceal all the truth about UFOs. Now supposing the American government, for example, bad photographs of UFOs entering or leaving the Earth, supposing they had definite proof that the Earth was hollow and that there was a high civilization within, then quite without a doubt the governments would try to conceal knowledge of the truth, or people would panic, start looting, commit suicide, and do all the strange things that humans do when they panic. We have only to remember the Orson Welles Raiders from Mars radio broadcast of a few years ago, when Americans really did most thoroughly panic in spite of being told by the announcers that it was only a play. So the governments conceal the truth because they are afraid of panic. But perhaps in the not too distant future, they will have to admit the truth. The truth being that there is a hollow Earth and a highly intelligent race within that hollow Earth, and that one form of UFO comes from inside the hollow Earth. Mind you, there is more than one type of UFO. One type comes from outer space, another type comes from inner space, that is, the inner side of the Earth. But again, supposing you say, I still say the fellow's crazy because there wouldn't be any room for a civilization inside the Earth. Well, sir or madam, as the case may be, that implies that you haven't done your homework. Let's have a look at some figures. I am not going to quote exact figures, or someone is sure to say, oh, look at him, now we know that he's a fraud. He's 6 inches short in the diameter of the world. Oh yes, loving reader, people do write and say such things, and they think themselves very clever. But anyway, let's have some rough figures. Now, the diameter of the Earth is roughly 7,927 miles. Now, supposing we say, we've got to give some figures, haven't we? That the thickness of the crust of the Earth on the Earth side and the thickness of the soil side of the inner Earth comes to 800 miles. Well, if you add those two 800s together you get 1,600, and if you subtract that from 7,927 you get 6,327 miles. That, then, we can say is very, very approximately the diameter of the world inside this world. That means that the inner world is, again roughly, 2.9 times larger than the moon, so that if somehow you could get the moon inside the Earth the poor wretched thing would rattle around like the pea inside a referee's whistle. The diameter of the moon, remember, is roughly 2,160 miles, and the estimated diameter of the world inside this Earth is, we decided, 6,327 miles. So now you do some arithmetic for a change. I'm right, aren't I? Another point of interest is this: only an eighth of the surface of the world is land, 7/8 is water, seas, oceans, lakes, and all that, so it could easily be that there is more land inside the world than outside, and if there is more land inside then there could be more people inside. Or if they regularly take the pill they may have bred for quality rather than quantity. I believe all this, you know, I have believed it for years, and I have studied it very, very thoroughly. I have read all I could about it, and if you do the same then without a doubt you will come to the same conclusion that I have, which is that there is another world inside this Earth of ours, that it is 2.9 times the size of the moon, and that it is populated by a very intelligent race. Another thing of interest is this: look at all the explorers who have been to the pole. None of them has ever proved that he got there. Think of Admiral Peary, think of Wilkinson, Amundsen, Shackleton, Scott, etc., etc. All these men who, in theory, went there by water or went there on foot or who flew to the area, not one of them ever truly, demonstrably proved that he had reached the pole itself. I believe they couldn't, because the pole is a remote area somewhere in space above the surface, and, as has been proved, the location varies quite a lot. So there it is. If you are interested, don't write to me about it, because I have said all I am going to say about it. Oh yes, I know a lot more, I know a great deal more than I have written, but just trot along to a really good bookstore and buy some books on the Hollow Earth. It is kinder to the author to buy than to read it up in the public library, because the poor wretched author has to live, and he can't live when people just read stuff free. He depends upon his royalties. After all, if it's worth reading, it's worth paying for. Chapter 3, It Was Cold in Calgary. Snow lay all about, obscuring the railway tracks, covering the frozen river. The cold was terrible, a cold that seemed to penetrate everywhere, a cold which seemed to magnify sound from the frozen streets. Drivers still whirled along seemingly without a care in the world. Calgary, we are told, has two claims to fame: it has more cars per capita, why not say per person, than any other place on the North American continent. And the second claim to fame, if fame it can be called, is that the drivers of Calgary are more dangerous than any other drivers on the North American continent. People run around as if they hadn't a care in the world. Then, presumably, they wake up in heaven or the other place and find that they have. They've got a load of karma from the people they killed in the accident. But the cold this day was just fantastic. And then across the sky there came a peculiar band of cloud, or should I say cloud and light intermixed, and the air immediately grew warmer, as if someone up there had taken pity on the poor mortals of Calgary and switched on a very efficient electric heater. The air suddenly grew warm. The crisp snow became soggy, and water poured from rooftops. The Chinook winds had come, the greatest blessing of Calgary, especially one meteorological formation which suddenly brings a whole lot of hot air. Well, Look at their government, from Vancouver, hot air which turns a frigid day into a mellow day. The snow soon melted. The Chinook winds persisted during the afternoon and evening, and on the following day there was no trace of snow at all in Calgary. But letters do not bother to wait for warm weather, they come all the time like bills and income tax demands, they wait for no man, they wait for nothing. Here is a letter shrieking in bright fluorescent red ink. Some cantankerous lady wrote, "You tell us about mantras, but the things you tell us are no good. Your mantras don't work. I wanted to win the sweepstake and I said my mantra three times, and I didn't win it. What have you to say about that?" Well now, why do some of these old biddies get in such a state? It's shockingly bad for their blood pressure. It's far worse for their spiritual development. In any case, she wasn't saying my mantra, she was apparently doing a thing against which I specifically warn one. It is not right to try to win a gamble by the use of mantras. A gamble is a gamble, just that and nothing more, and if you try to use mantras for gambling wins, then you do a lot of harm to yourself. There have been a lot of people, though, who seem to have had bad luck in not getting their mantras in good working order. Probably it is because they don't set about it in the right way. Undoubtedly it is because they cannot visualize what it is they want to get over to the subconscious. You see, you've got to know what you are saying, you've got to convince yourself what you are saying, and having convinced yourself, you've got to convince your subconscious. Look at it like a business proposition. You want something specific. It must be something which your subconscious wants as well. Let's say, for example, and this is just an idle example, remember, so don't write me a load of letters saying I have contradicted myself or something like that, as so many of you absolutely delight in doing. Most times you are wrong, anyway. Let us say that Mr. Smith wants a job and he is going to an interview tomorrow, or the day after that with Mr. Brown. So Mr. Smith churns out a mantra. He mumbles, mumbles, mumbles while he is thinking about getting this nonsense over so he can go to the pictures or go and get a drink or go and find a girlfriend, or something like that. He tries to get it over and done with, and having said it three times, he is convinced he has done everything necessary and the powers that be are responsible for everything else after. Then Mr. Smith rushes out, goes to the pictures, perhaps goes to a bar and gets a swig or two of beer, and picks up a girl, and when he goes for his interview with Mr. Brown, well, he doesn't make a hit. Of course he doesn't. He hasn't prepared for it. He hasn't done his homework. What he should do is this: Mr. Smith wants a job, so he has applied for a job having assured himself that he has the necessary qualifications and abilities with which to carry out the tasks imposed by that job if he gets it. He has heard from a Mr. Brown saying that Mr. Brown will grant him an interview at such and such a time on such and such a day. A sensible Mr. Smith tries to find out something about Mr. Brown if he can. What's the man like? What does he look like? What is his position in the firm? Is he a friendly type? Well, you can usually find out those things by phoning the telephone girl of the firm concerned and asking her. A lot of these girls are very flattered indeed. So if Mr. Smith says he is trying to get a job with the firm and he is going to be given an interview on such and such a day, and will the girl tell him something about Mr. Brown, the interviewer after all, he can say, "I shall soon be working with you, so let's make a friendship now, tell me what you can." The girl invariably responds favorably if she is approached in the right way. She is flattered that someone has appealed to her for help, she is flattered that someone thinks she is such a good judge of charcater, she is flattered to think that a possibly new member to the firm had sense enough to get in touch with her. So she gives the information. Perhaps she can tell Mr. Smith that a picture of Mr. Brown appeared in the Dogwashers Monthly magazine, or something, when he took up his new appointment with the firm. So Mr. Smith goes along to the local library and takes a good hard look at a picture of Mr. Brown. He looks at the picture and looks at it, and fixes it in his mind. Then off he goes home, keeping Mr. Brown's face in his mind. There he sits down and imagines that Mr. Brown is in front of him, unable to talk. The poor fellow just has to sit and listen. So Mr. Smith unloads a talk about himself, about his own abilities. He says what he has to say convincingly, and if he is alone he can say it in a low voice. If he is not alone he'd better just think it to himself, otherwise some other person in the house might take Mr. Smith off to the place where people like that are taken, because not everyone understands visualization mantras, etc. If this is done right, then when Mr. Smith goes to see Mr. Brown, Mr. Brown has a distinct impression that he has seen Mr. Smith before under very favorable terms, and do you know why? I'll tell you. If it is done properly, Mr. Smith will have made his mark in the ether, and his subconscious will, during the time of astral travel, meet and discuss things with Mr. Brown's subconscious. Oh good gracious me, it really does work. I've tried it time after time. I know hundreds, thousands of people who have tried it too, and it does work if you do your job properly. But if a lazy Mr. Smith just thinks of girl chasing, film watching and beer drinking, then his mind is on those things, girl chasing, film watching and beer drinking, and he doesn't get any response from Mr. Brown's subconscious. I'll tell you what I'll do, I'll make a worthwhile suggestion to you, to those of you who find it hard to concentrate in the right way. Now, there are such things as rosaries, Catholics have them, Buddhists have them, and a lot of others have them. Not everyone has them like hippies just for little things to hang on to them to make them look different. So let's think of a string of beads. All right, what are we going to do about the beads? First of all, we have to make the type of string of beads we want. How many beads are we going to have, and does it matter how many beads there are? If most certainly does. Psychiatrists are a pretty dumb lot, really, and I think most of them are crazier than the people they treat. It's like setting a thief to catch a thief. You have to get a lunatic to treat a lunatic, so to my way of thinking, most psychiatrists are as crazy as can be. But sometimes, by accident, they come up with a piece of information which can be of use to someone. So a gang of these head shrinkers have come up with an idea that it takes 45 repetitions to get a thing safely locked into one's subconsciousness. So for those of you who can't concentrate on a thing properly, let's have a string of beads. Let's make it 50 beads for good measure. So you start off by going along to the best hobby or handicraft store you can find, and pouring through a load of loose beads until you find the type, style, pattern and size which most appeals to you. I find that the best ones for me are of average pea size, and the ones I have are of polished wood. Then you get a length of nylon cord on which the beads will very easily slide. Then you buy your 50 beads, and they must be identical in size, and then if you want to you can get about 3 larger ones to act as a marker. When you get home you thread 50 of your beads on this nylon thread. Make sure they slide easily. And then tie a knot, and on the 2 pieces of thread hanging down from the knot thread perhaps 3 larger beads and knot the end again. The idea of this is merely to tell you when you have completed one complete circuit of your beads. So then you sit down as comfortably as you can in a chair, or lie down, or if it is more comfortable stand on your head. It doesn't matter how you sit or lie, so long as you are comfortable and you do not have muscles under tension. Then you decide what you want to say to your subconscious. Now, it is important what you say and how you say it. It just definitely, definitely must be positive. You cannot have a negative thing or you will get the wrong result. It should be I will. It should be short and sharp, and definitely something which can be repeated without too much strain on the intellect. You'd be surprised how strained some intellects become. Mr. Smith wants to impress Mr. Brown, so he could say, "This is just an example, mind don't quote me, I will favorably impress Mr. Brown. I will favorably impress Mr. Brown. I will favorably impress Mr. Brown." Well, poor old Mr. Smith has to repeat that 50 times. Each time as he gets to Mr. Brown in his words he flips one bead back, and so on until he has repeated 50 times. The idea is to use the beads as a form of computer, because you cannot say, "I will favorably impress Mr. Brown," That said it once, I will favorably impress Mr. Brown. That said it twice, I will favorably impress Mr. Brown. That said it three times, because you will get all gummed up with your words and with your instructions to your over self.